DCS asks for nearly $300 million a year. Mike Pence stays silent in an Oval Office squabble. That plus Governor Holcomb tries to clarify on teacher pay and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 14th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the Indiana Department of Child Services said it needs about $300 million more per year in funding than it got in the last state budget.
When lawmakers passed a two-year budget in 2017, they gave DCS more than $600 million a year. But the number of children in the system then dramatically increased. Legislators and the governor responded, sending hundreds of millions more to the agency in one-time money. Now, DCS says it needs that one-time money to become part of its ongoing budget. It wants $965 million a year the next 2 years. Agency leaders presented their budget request to the State Budget Committee this week. Republican Senator Liz Brown pointed out DCS's request doesn't account for any new increase in children who need services, but DCS Director Terry Stigdon says the agency changed its strategies. For instance, it doesn't immediately remove children from their homes as much.
Will DCS's budget request be enough? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, DCS wants its one-time money to become permanent. Obviously, that's a no-brainer for lawmakers, I would think, but is that enough?
I don't know whether it's enough. I think we're going to need to see, you know, that there are cycles in DCS. I mean, when Judge Payne was in charge, no child was removed from the house. And then when Ms. Bonaventura was there, many kids were taken out. What the happy medium is, I don't know. And with the opioid crisis striking, I think that's going to raise a lot of questions and a lot of demand, obviously, on DCS. So whether it's the right amount or not, I don't know. It's certainly what they were spending, so it's no surprise that it'll be the budget this time as opposed to coming in with an appropriation after the fact. I just don't know whether it's enough. It's a big problem.
Director Stigdon said, in answer to that very question that was raised by Liz Brown, which is, you don't think you're going to continue to see greater demand? And she said, maybe, but we're confident that we can handle any greater demand with the way we're changing our system. Basically, can we trust that?
Well, we'll know when we're in it. I mean, this is a $600 million increase over the biennium, right? Or it's $286 million a year. It's money, as Anne pointed out, that they're already spending, and they're implementing the recommendations from the comprehensive review of the agency. They've got to completely overhaul, and they plan to overhaul the child welfare system, the child support systems. Those plans are moving forward inside that agency. But the state had to go find this $286 million from other agencies from the surplus and find other, like, one-time uses of dollars, which you can't. If you're going to burn an extra $300 million a year, it's got to be built into your budget. And the lawmakers, they have to do it because otherwise, I mean, you're just burning through other agency appropriations. You're burning through the surplus, and you're doing it in no time at that level of spending.
DCS is one of those agencies, though, where if in 6 months or a year they came back and said, oh, sorry, we need $100 million more, on the one hand, it's like, well, just give it to them, obviously. But on the other hand, does it start to become more and more and more of a problem at that point?
Maybe eventually, but I think in the short term, certainly this session, because of what we saw with the controversy and the departure of the previous director and the concern about potential tragedies occurring, I think they can get just about anything they want or need this coming biennium. Now, if that becomes, you know, a 10-year plan and every year sees that kind of increase and they haven't been able to pinpoint a formula that actually gets them the right amount of money, then maybe people say, hey, what's going on? But because of nobody wants to be, we've talked about this before, nobody wants to say, oh, because of a lack of funding or because of double staffing here or an inability to respond quickly there, a child lost his or her life. And because
well, we've had that happen.
We've
had study after study after
it
study.
It has, but what's
and
different?
Improvement after improvement, improvement, and
but
the
what's
same
different
thing
now,
happens.
Basically, this whole controversy and the consultant that came in, the state was put on notice effectively. That's why, in the short term anyway, I think
Yeah, but it was supposed to be fixed when Mike Pence was there and had the regional call system. Whatever happened to that?
Ever, I think
that
was centralized, I believe.
Yeah, no kidding.
Terry Stigdon did have some data at that budget committee hearing that sort of backs up this notion that, yeah, what we've been getting by with the last year and a half or so is what we can continue to get by with, for at least for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of very kind of small internal changes that to, you know, us on the street wouldn't make a big difference, but they help reduce turnover, you know, things like that. And they are already seeing the ongoing case numbers come down for the first time in years. I do think one of the more interesting things that came out of that was, given all the issues they've had finding foster parents, they didn't have any proposal for either adding child care money or increasing provider rates or increasing foster care payments.
Well, they say they're going to take fewer children out of the home, too, so there may be a correlation there. And just I just sincerely hope that child safety is the primary motivator here.
Well, it seems like it's always about finding that. Where is that sweet spot?
That's exactly right, and it can't be too far either way, it seems to me, so we'll see if they can do it.
And it is in the definition. Again, this comes out of some of the studies that were done or the consultants that came up, but you look at is poverty, does that constitute neglect potentially?
It does under current law, but they want to change
correct,
that. That's
correct, because that's one of the recommendations, and that's a definitional change, but that could have a significant impact.
Well, President Trump bickered with Democratic congressional leaders in the Oval Office in front of reporters this week. In a testy exchange with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, President Trump declared he'd be, quote, proud to shut down the government if he didn't get funding for his proposed border wall. Trump and Pelosi argued over whether the president had enough votes in the House to secure that border wall funding, and Schumer at times directly addressed the reporters in the room.
When the president brags that he won North Dakota and Indiana, he's in real trouble.
Vice President Mike Pence sat silently through the meeting, and after President Trump was criticized in some corners for his performance in the exchange, he reportedly blamed Pence for not speaking up. Mike Bryan, what was Mike Pence thinking?
The best comparison I had, I was told, was it's like a Southwest commercial where it's where the dings, and then they said, "Do you want to get away?" It could have been, it could have been similar to that. The Chuck Schumer line, I don't know what that reveals about what Democrats now think about Indiana. Whether it's just unwinnable. If Republicans are bragging about winning Indiana, maybe in Chuck Schumer's mind and the National Democrats' mind, Indiana's just off the table. It's just unwinnable. So don't brag about winning. You should have won, right?
So I had that same kind of reaction, which was, well, he shouldn't brag about Indiana because, of course, he was going to win Indiana. Is that bad news for Indiana Democrats?
It doesn't say anything going forward. And the thing that bothered me about this whole thing, you had Mike Pence in some publications called a sphinx. In one publication, he was called the throw pillow. I mean, you look at this thing, what was he doing there?
What was he supposed to do?
Well, if you're staffing the president and things are getting out of hand, you put yourself in there.
I'm not sure anyone
and you settle it down.
This. I mean, it's not like the Democrats won the day.
Well, you can't. Obviously, you can't control Donald Trump because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Or
and he doesn't care what he
apparently.
Says. But why was Mike Pence even there then under those circumstances? If he can't add anything, he looks comical. He really does.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, someone said, he didn't win the day. I don't think anyone won that. But you know who lost? Mike Pence. Because his facial expressions, and I mean, I kind of imagine that he was just sitting there, praying that they could stop. But yeah, I mean, all the late night talk show hosts led with Pence and, ridiculous memes and stuff. And so it was not a good 12 minutes for the vice president.
Yeah, in that sense, it becomes, what did Mike Pence hope to gain by being in that room?
Well, I think his...
Obviously,
Donald Trump
says
I don't know if he was invited
there,
or if it was a command performance, but I think if you think back to the earliest days of the administration, Mike Pence, and I think there was justification for this assessment, he was seen as the guy who could work with Congress.
The connection Senate, to the Hill.
He was a veteran of that. He understood. And say what you will, you may or may not agree with his policies, but he is a Midwestern nice guy. I mean, I don't think he likes getting in people's faces. I never saw that. He's a genuinely nice person. Again, agree or disagree with the politics. So when you see this kind of rhetoric, I don't think it's his style. I mean, he was the guy, remember, in some of these debates when they were needing votes, they would dispatch Mike Pence to the Hill, remember?
Yeah, he's not the arm twister, necessarily.
No. Well, he was the arm twister. He was the glad hander, maybe not the arm twister.
Yeah.
And I think this is
But he didn't do any of that in this meeting. Well, he tried to do some of that.
He can't reach over the president.
Well,
and,
he could try to lower the temperature.
I'm going to back away. I'm going to have the same body language and that he
tried to
had.
Lower the temperature.
Yeah,
she tried to kick the press out.
Yeah.
Well, it would have been. It certainly would have been in Mike Pence's interest for the press to leave, and probably for Donald Trump's. He's shutting the government down. Okay, he wants it on his head. God love him.
All right,
Nobody else does.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Mike Pence to blame for the tense Oval Office exchange between President Trump and Democratic leaders, as President Trump seemed to indicate? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, is it the right move for Governor Holcomb to say no to new tolling on Indiana interstates during his tenure? 69% say yes. 31% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb this week tried to reframe his comments about teacher pay raises after he was criticized for the timeline he laid out with his legislative agenda. In Holcomb's legislative agenda rollout, he said a long-term plan to raise teacher salaries would take time to craft. He aimed for the 2021 budget for that sustainable system. But many, including the Indiana State Teachers Association, said raises would have to come sooner. And now, Holcomb says he hopes to raise educator salaries in the short and long term. He says the short-term solution would be through an overall education funding increase.
Nikki Kelly, raises are decided at the local level. Everybody's been stressing that through this process. So can the governor really promise teacher raises in this budget through an overall funding increase?
I think it gets hard. I think what he and lawmakers can do is really put the pressure back on the local districts. I mean, they can come out with whatever budget they pass. Let's say they say 2% increase. They can say, look, we're giving a 2% increase, and we feel that this should go to teachers. So if you don't see it in your paycheck, you know, talk to your school board leaders, that kind of thing. Although, to be fair, if they give them an increase that's less than inflationary, you know, when you got to cover utilities and healthcare things that automatically go up, a lot of that gets eaten up before they even get to raises.
Yeah, you had the governor at his address at the legislative conference this week say, we're going to raise teacher salaries in the short and long term. The long term has to be figured out. The short term is an overall funding increase. And then a couple panels later, you had his budget director say, well, we've seen overall education funding increases for a while, and the raises haven't been there. Aren't those two things at odds with each other?
It's not surprising, I guess, is it? I mean, those sessions were a whole hour or two apart. So, you know, things could change.
Maybe the moderator at that second panel had something to do with it.
Well, I hear he was a pretty skillful guy.
I think that was John's.
Yes.
Yeah, that was mine. Thank you. I don't think, clearly there is some, the beep beep. You heard the beep beep earlier of the Southwest Airlines plane getting away. Now it's the beep 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 of the backing up, you know, utility vehicle. Because clearly putting off increases or studying them for this biennium, and that seems to be the inference that most people drew with where we were headed with this before, might not have been tenable, especially because of the optics of, you know, one of the few bones that's thrown to teachers now, and it's not uniform, they don't go to everyone, but certain teachers who meet certain criteria, effective, or what's even better than effective, greatly effective.
Highly effective, yeah.
Highly effective. There are the appreciation grants that right now is funded to the tune, I think, $30 million.
And the governor is proposing.
And his proposal is to take that off the table. Now, $10 million of that would go into a larger tax credit for teachers who buy supplies, a lot much larger, from $100 to $500, and the other would go into tuition support. So I'm not saying that's a bad approach, but optics.
Yeah.
It looks like you're taking the one thing away from teachers.
You can't say on the one hand, this system that we are currently trying to give teachers raises doesn't work, but that's how we're going to deliver raises this year.
Well, I think Nikki's right. I think that the legislature, to some degree, has to get back to, and the governor have to get back to, kind of, they have a pretty big stick in all of this, in the amount of money that they, the $7.1 billion they send down to the local level. But look, everybody's in, we all share in this. I mean, when people, if you have people, voters or taxpayers at the local level who say we should pay teachers more, and they vote against the referendum. You know, we have school boards that believe the same thing, but send fewer dollars down to the classroom. And then the legislature is going to have to increase, continue to increase funding just to keep up with increased costs. So everybody's got a role in this, and they've all got to be, and they've got to share that priority that teacher, that money needs to flow into teachers' salaries, or it's not going to. It doesn't matter how much money you put in the system.
Yeah, the teacher salaries are disgraceful. I mean, we're at the bottom of the states in terms of what we offer for teachers. We have teachers who are making less than people doing warehouse work for Amazon, and they have college degrees. It's ridiculous. You can't simply increase the funding. That's a function of Mitch Daniels taking the funding away from the locals and putting it at the state level. So you've got to go to the legislature, and they've got to be more creative. They have to increase funding because of the increased cost. There's no question about that. But then you create a pool of money, and you say to the districts, there's a minimum salary of, say, $40,000 per teacher. And if you're paying, if you want to get to that minimum salary, you use this money. And if you're already at that minimum salary, then you can use it for some other thing, rewarding teachers in some other way. But it has to be targeted to teacher increases because there's too much pressure at the local level. They've got to have funding increases, but they also have to have a way to make certain that the legislature, not the locals, but the legislature directs that money to teachers. And the teachers have a right to expect the legislature to do that because of the way the funding mechanism was taken away from the locals and put in the legislature.
With all the fight every year at the legislature over a number of different issues about the idea of local control, is this one where there perhaps needs to be a little less local control if leaders want to deliver on this promise?
Well, I remember back when we did remove all the operational off the property taxes. And at the time, there was a lot of backlash saying, oh, the state legislature is just going to be one big school board. I mean, that was the criticism at the time. And now we're kind of getting to the point where they might have to be one big school board.
Exactly.
Well, you also look at the issue, what can teachers, through collective bargaining, actually, what's fair game for bargaining? Is it class size? Is it money? Is it
a lot of those things changed?
Yeah. And
money is still bargainable.
Money is, but ISTA would tell you that other factors go into teacher satisfaction, and one of them might be a class of 15 as opposed to a class of 35 or whatever. Those things that aren't negotiated anymore.
Well, Indiana Department of Veterans Affairs Director Jim Brown resigned after media reports detailed complaints about misuse of military relief dollars. An Indianapolis Star report showed Brown okayed military family relief fund disbursements to department employees for more than the program's cap, while military veterans outside the agency were cut off at the limit. IDVA employees also received money from the fund for things like car payments and repairs, even though other Hoosier veterans were denied relief dollars for such needs. Brown defended his actions to the Star and expressed frustration over the criticism he received. In a statement, Governor Eric Holcomb thanked Brown for his service, and he calls the Vietnam and Afghanistan veteran a, quote, good man with a distinguished record. John Schwannis, is Holcomb's statement enough, given the cloud around Brown's departure?
Well, I mean, the governor starts from a standpoint of being a fan of the military and, in fact, is a veteran himself.
What politician isn't?
Right, but also look at what's in his budget proposal, or at least in one of his pillars. It's relieving, waiving the state income tax for anybody with a military pension.
Yeah.
So this is a theme. So it's kind of hard to, divorce any action now that may or may not have occurred from the service one gave, presumably to country. And I think he's trying to walk that line, and not say that just because he may have made mistakes now, and I don't know if the guy, I mean, he resigned, I don't know if it's been adjudicated, but if in fact those things are true, Does that do away with any good deeds he did during his service to country?
I don't think a lot of people are suggesting that Eric Holcomb should have trashed this guy as he walked out the door. But all he said was, thanks, he's a heck of a guy.
I mean, he's told reporters since that he's waiting for, an audit and to see how it went. The Star story was extremely well done. And I think it's safe to say that the rules for that program, if there were any, were being applied haphazardly. When you have one veteran who waits 4 months and the employee of the agency is approved for more than their amount that they should be approved the next day, there were serious problems
there. In one
case,
before he technically submitted the request,
yeah.
I think, the employee got approval. Yeah, obviously it's not a good look, but does Holcomb need to be a little firmer here, or can he play the waiting for the results of the audit?
I don't know how we can just wait for it, because I agree, that story was pretty detailed.
Yeah.
And the buck stops with Eric Holcomb. I mean, they're supposed to be supervising these agencies, and clearly that wasn't being done. I mean, the guy's military service may have been exemplary, but the way he ran that agency was horrendous. And I don't know how you look at that any other way.
And
that doesn't help veterans. That just helps his employees.
Yeah, and I'm unsure how an administration can not know that a program that they were supposed to have rules for 2 years ago still
didn't have any rules. Yeah, and who was checking?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the buck stops with Holcomb.
Yeah, does this require a greater response in any way, shape, or form from the governor?
I think it's in two parts. I think the governor's reaction to this was appropriate. This guy's got a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star. He's not going to trash this guy walking out the door before there's... And he's not going to trash a guy and walk out the door based on a news story, no matter how well we think it might have been done. There's an accountability within state government for this through the State Board of Accounts. They're going to perform this audit. And the governor's going to react to the facts. He's not going to react to just kind of the emotion of the article. And so there'll be a second opportunity to say something about this, and it's when the facts are in front of him, and it's determined that things were done inappropriately, what are the changes that need to take place in that agency so it doesn't happen again?
And he'll take responsibility, I'm sure.
He's
for
the kind
the lack
of guy who does.
Oversight.
He took responsibility for DCS, but he also didn't just mouth off about it at first. He waited until the facts were gathered, and he had another report,
just like, yeah. He wants to study teacher pay. I know. He likes to study a lot.
Just not, yeah.
Former Indiana Senators Evan Bayh and Richard Lugar this week joined 42 former colleagues on a letter urging the current Senate to rise above party affiliation and ideology.
The letter, published in the Washington Post, asks the current Senate to guard democracy by, quote, ensuring that partisanship or self-interest not replace national interest. Evan Bayh, a Democrat, served Indiana in the Senate for a dozen years, while Republican Richard Lugar is the longest-serving member of Congress in Indiana history, serving from 1977 to 2013. The letter references Robert Mueller's investigation and Democrats' likely upcoming investigation of the president, and it calls the current period a, quote, critical moment in American history, and says constitutional crises threaten our foundation. The missive from 44 former senators says it is the Senate that must stand in defense of the American democracy.
Mike O'Brien, does this make waves? Does it have any impact, or is this just one you forget about a week later?
I think it's entirely human to think that when you left a job or a school or an institution like the U.S. Senate that you think you just went to hell when you left. So every problem is, you know, wasn't like that when I was there, so I don't know what they're doing. But, you know, I've also had enough of, like, the holier-than-thou Evan Bayh, who trashed the institution on his way out the door and then went and worked for the biggest lobbying firm in the world and made millions of dollars out of it, now coming back saying, hey, this process is broken. Okay, well, you're a part of it. Thanks for signing.
Richard Lugar as well?
No, Richard Lugar's in a class all of his own.
Okay, so they reached the same conclusion, but one's way of doing it and the other's
completely wrong. I'm just tired of the Evan Bayh hypocrisy. I'm just tired of the hypocrite Evan Bayh just mouthing off constantly.
You just don't like him is what it comes down to. That's all it comes down to.
I'm just worn out.
I hope it has some impact, because I really do. I really am afraid of what happens with this country, with that leadership that we have in the presidency, and also the amount of acrimony that we see in Congress. It's frightening. We're at a constitutional crisis. I don't know what's going to happen with Mueller's report, but it's clear that the Russians interfered in our election, and that is, I mean, our democratic elections are the cornerstone of this country. And we have a foreign power that doesn't have our best interests at heart intervening in it, and we're not taking enough steps to stop it.
But, you know, a letter in the Washington Post from a bunch of people
well,
who
what
used
do you
to
do?
Serve
do
in the
they
body.
Grab pitchforks and march?
Yeah, no, I'm not expecting much. And to be honest, I mean, it's a pipe dream to think that, you know, party politics aren't going to play a role in
and that they haven't
house.
Always, too.
Yeah.
To
but
a
things
extent.
Were, I mean, it's... Your point's well taken about we always look at things through the proverbial rose-colored glasses and say it was better then. But I think if you look at it with empirical data, it was better then. I mean, people were more collegial. You know, nobody even lives in D.C. anymore. Everybody just gets out of Dodge. They treat it as a commuter job, so nobody knows anybody in a social context.
That sounds to me like just trying to connect back to your constituents, John. I don't know what the problem with that is.
Well, you don't get government done that way. No, it's well,
it is a difference.
All right.
It is
well,
different.
Well, finally, a Vermont man recently erected a giant statue of a middle finger after local town officials repeatedly denied his request to build an expansion to his business. Now, Ann Delaney, we love to see Indiana lawmakers overreact to the fun story of the week. How soon will we see a bill at the legislature that bans something like this here?
I would hope they'd have more sense. I mean, obviously it's distasteful, but, you know, you don't have to look at it. And it is, as John would tell you, First Amendment protected free speech.
It was in a political context. But also, I'm not sure why you need to blur it. It looks like a blob.
Yeah, you're turning it. You're doing that. It's not as if he's exposing himself or anything.
My only hope is my husband doesn't see that story.
I'm doing it. I've been trying to get a stop sign in front of my house for like a year.
Look out, Avon. Mike O'Brien's
so,
coming.
So, are you going to do it?
I'm doing it.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/iwir, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.